I'm back, Kirk Ludeke, the Scouting Post. One last podcast for the Boston Bruins 2016-17 preview series. Normally, I'd like to say you saved the best for last. That's not really the case here. I'm going to talk the defensemen in this particular edition. And, you know, you try to be even-handed in your analysis. And you try to be fair, and you know you don't want to play certain aspects up more than they should, and you don't want to maybe be overly negative and dwell on certain shortcomings. By the same token, and so the purpose of this session is to kind of cover, you know, to the best of my ability. How I see things playing out a little this season, and it's an interesting time for the Bruins, because when you look at the team just on paper and on the roster, I mean, there's a lot of reason for optimism. You know, certainly we talked about the goaltenders and Tuukka Rask, Anton Khudobin. There's no reason why those players don't have the talent to get the Bruins pretty far this season, at least, you know, into contention for a playoff berth. Certainly, the scoring up front, while not at the very top end of the NHL, is I believe, when you take the centers and the wingers and you add them together, you can make a case that this Boston Bruins team, even with the loss of Louis Erickson, is going to be top third, pushing for top third, because, you know, they did add David Backes, and I think Frank Vetrano certainly has an opportunity to step up and show the rest of the league that he is a prime goal scorer. I do believe we'll see a resurgence from David Pastrnak after taking a bit of a step back last season, a lot of that due to injury. So there's reason for optimism. There are other players, other forwards on the roster. You know, certainly the Ryan Spooners, he could step up and produce more offense this year. You know, in his second real full season as a full-time NHL roster player. So, you know, reason to be positive. Like I said, it may not play out that way, but on paper at least, you know, the goaltending and the forwards make the Bruins look like they are a playoff team, even if they may not be a Stanley Cup contender. And look, you know, I know the expectation every year is, you know, the Boston Bruins and your favorite hockey team, just insert the name, ought to be contending for a cup. And it's easy to take that position, because just a few short years ago, the Boston Bruins were the top team in the regular season. Prior to that, they had lost out in the Stanley Cup final to a very good Chicago Blackhawks team, 2011, you know, just 5 years removed from winning it all. So there is an expectation that the Bruins have a window in which to compete. Certainly Patrice Bergeron, David Krejci are now over 30. Zdeno Chara is nearing 40. But I don't think you can go through life just kind of expecting to be contenders. And by the same token, you know, it's kind of counterproductive to sit there and write off a season if you're not considered a contender or you're not going to go far. I think certainly making the playoffs for a relatively young team on the whole in other areas can be beneficial to their development. So even if this Boston Bruins team is not primed to contend for a championship, and as constructed, let's be honest, they are not. They're still success by making the postseason. Now, we can have a conversation about ownership and the front office, Cam Neely and the Jacobs family, and what those expectations mean, and jobs on the line for not making the playoffs should the Bruins fail a third consecutive year to make the postseason. But ultimately, I think, you know, the Bruins want and need to get back to the postseason this year. Whether they can do it, well, we don't know. And that leads us into the discussion of the defensemen, because that's the big unknown. When you look at the offseason, I don't think it's out of bounds or unrealistic to say that more was expected in terms of personnel moves and various additions and subtractions than what actually happened. And hey, let's be honest, general manager Don Sweeney, he was a longtime NHL defenseman and played with Ray Bourque. He's played more than 1,000 games in the National Hockey League. Most of his career spent with the Bruins. He knows the importance of the blue line and what that means for a team. So it isn't like the general manager and the head decision maker in terms of how this roster is assembled, you know, is unaware of what this team is dealing with. Unfortunately for Boston, the way the NHL is configured nowadays, the team just has not done a good enough job drafting players and then acquiring players via trade in past years to build a stable of players on the blue line who are ready to come in and help this team get back to where it needs to be in terms of contention, at least getting to the playoffs and contending for a championship. The system certainly looks like it has some impressive young players coming up through the ranks, and we'll talk a little about them later. The Bruins just won both of the games in the Prospects Challenge in Buffalo, beating the New Jersey Devils and the Buffalo Prospects rookie group, and that's a pretty significant accomplishment, I suppose. Both the Devils and the Sabres have been non-playoff teams of late, and they've made a lot of picks in recent years, and some good ones. Certainly, I don't think the Devils didn't have Pavel Zacha, who was their top selection from 2015, in the lineup the other night, Monday night against, Sunday night against the Bruins, but. You know, there's certainly reason to expect that a couple of these draft picks going back to 2011 and Rob O'Gara in the fifth round, and you know, certainly when you talk defensemen, you're looking at the Jakub Zboryls and the Jeremy Lauzons and Charlie McAvoy, who wasn't even a part of this Prospects Challenge because he's back in school. And even Linus Arneson, who was injured for the Prospects Challenge, Matt Grizzlick, and then, of course, Brandon Carlo, who seems to be on the tip of everyone's tongue. I mean, there are some young defensemen who are coming up, but realistically, are they ready to contribute this season and help the Bruins this season? That's the burning question. So we'll get to it, and I'll do my best to break down the defensemen. Not going to belabor the point. I mean, I don't think... If you're listening to this podcast, you're probably a hardcore fan enough to know that what I'm putting out is not breaking news. It's not any kind of profound analysis. I mean, it kind of is what it is. And so you have to look at the Bruins defense in the context of today. And the fact of the matter is, for a variety of reasons, some of them known, some of them not so known, there wasn't much off-season movement to shape this roster, and it is largely the same roster of defensemen that played last year and that struggled down the stretch and ultimately contributed to another non-playoff finish after the Bruins looked like they were poised to get in and get in with some breathing room. I mean, 2015... Boston had put themselves in a position where they were fighting to get into the playoff picture. And it was disappointing that they fell short. But last year was worse, you could argue, because in the middle of March, they were sitting up near the top of the standings in the conference. Washington was leading the way, but the Bruins at one point were second overall in the conference and were leading the division. And just the way things, it wasn't that they missed the playoffs last year, it's the way it happened. So, biggest move in the offseason from the defenseman perspective was the extension of Torrey Krug. I've talked about it quite a bit. I recently submitted a post on the blog, the Scouting Post blog, called "Becoming the Bull," linking Tori Krug to a song by Atreyu that is a personal favorite. Invite you to check that out. But Krug is really kind of taking on the reins of being Boston's most visible and capable defenseman, and some people are just not going to get on board with that because they'll look at his size and they'll continue to point to that size and say he's limited. And there's not much you can say about that other than if you're not looking at the entire body of work and you're not looking at his skill level, his outstanding hockey sense and, his character, his heart, his drive, you're probably selling him a little short. Yes. I mean, because he's 5'8", 5'9", even though he's a very strong, and a real athlete, you know, strong player and an athlete, he cannot take on the big, just straight up, you know, guys like Ryan Getzlaff and Joe Thornton and those big physical, players, forwards, high end, power forwards in the league. He can't take them on in a physical contest and expect to win. But what Krug can do is outsmart them. His defensive game has improved significantly since he signed as a free agent in 2012. He just continues to get better. We have to remember last year, a lot of people point to last season and they criticize the kind of year he had because he scored 4 goals and he had been in double digits the previous 2 seasons. Well, he was playing on one arm, injured his shoulder early in the year, and he just couldn't generate the kind of power that he normally does with a shot. And as I've said previously, that was probably a blessing in disguise for the Bruins because had he scored 15 goals or so, 16, 14, what have you, double digits, it wouldn't have been as easy to sign him to a 4-year extension, paying him an average annual value of $5.25 million. Which is pretty good, it's a pretty good rate. It is the market rate for what defensemen are getting. I think the Bruins actually got a bargain. I think that in years 2, 3, and 4 of that deal, Krug will be a nice value for the Bruins. But anyway, enough about him. He is a key defenseman, a key aspect of this team. And I think this season you'll see him play more minutes, do more, play a more role. Now, he's got to have a good partner. He's got to have the right partner. And, he's been playing with Adam McQuaid, and we certainly respect Adam McQuaid for his size and his toughness and his willingness to do the grunt work. But Adam McQuaid is, he's a limited skill defenseman. He is an ideal bottom pairing guy who ends up playing more minutes and in a greater and expanded role with this team more out of necessity. And so that devalues him a little bit. It reminds me of Hal Gill in the early 2000s when the Bruins had him up on the top pairing because they really had no choice. But unfortunately, that exposed Gill. Gill went on to play more than 1,000 games, won a Stanley Cup with the Pittsburgh Penguins. I mean, he's an accomplished NHL player, but Gill's legacy in Boston is always somewhat diminished because I think he was unfairly tarred with this contempt by the fans who saw him playing in a role where more was asked of what he could deliver. And I'm afraid the same kind of role requests, and it's a tad unreasonable, but I'm afraid the same kind of history is repeating itself in Boston, where guys like Adam McQuaid and Kevin Miller are being asked to do too much for this team and to play a bigger role than they are really capable of playing. And if they were bottom pairing guys and there was a higher talent, higher level talent around them, certainly in your top three, we wouldn't be having this conversation. Fans would respect and value what they bring to the table. So that's going to be the key thing with Krug is finding the right partner to get the most out of him, because his size does limit him. He doesn't have the reach and he doesn't have the physical strength to match up sometimes, especially when opponents are driving the net. And that's going to be the danger of playing Krug in a number one, number two role. But he's certainly capable of doing it. And he spent a career, you know, proving people wrong. So I would not think he's just going to rest on his laurels and stop doing that because he signed a four-year deal. Key thing will be seeing how he comes back from his shoulder surgery. There is a healing and a transition process. He tells us, I mean, for those of you who haven't heard, we had Tori on the Three Amigos podcast a few weeks back, and he certainly was encouraged by the progress and where he is, believes he's going to be ready to go for the start of the year. But until we see it, we won't know for sure. Zdeno Chara, or Zdeno Chara, as the Slovaks I served with in Afghanistan pointed out to me, and he's going to turn 40 this year. And it's really hard to believe. I mean, he's been an NHL regular since the beginning of the millennium, and the Bruins nearly acquired him in 2001 at the draft, trade package. Jason Allison to the Islanders fell through at the last minute, and so he went to Ottawa. But they ultimately, the Bruins lucked out, and when Ottawa chose the wrong defenseman, Wade Redden, and extended him and let Chara go to free agency. This is one of those things where, it's unfortunate because he's been so good for so long. You know, 6'9" defenseman, Norris Trophy winner with the Bruins in 2009, captained the team to the Stanley Cup. Really was Peter Chiarelli's signature acquisition coming in. And yes, technically, interim GM Jeff Gorton signed Zdeno Chara to as an unrestricted free agent, on July 1st, 2006. But the reality is that was Peter Chiarelli's get. Their relationship when Chiarelli was assistant GM in Ottawa. There's no way the Bruins land Chara without Chiarelli. And so while technically the guy signing the official negotiations above board was Gorton, it was really Chiarelli who was instrumental in landing him. So, now a decade later, he's been a key cog for the Bruins, and you have to respect what Chara has provided. But unfortunately, injuries have taken a toll. He's basically playing on one leg, and the team just has not identified another player that could kind of go in and effectively partner with him and protect him a bit. And so what we see is he still plays an inordinate number of minutes, even though the Bruins are making a conscious effort, and Claude Julien was making an effort to shelter him a bit and reduce his role. Out of necessity, Chara just was playing more and more down the stretch as they tried to cling to that playoff spot. And, it just ultimately didn't work out. I think it would be foolish to believe that they can do the same thing this year and come out with a different result. It's that old Einstein definition of insanity. So, we really have to start coming to grips with, on life without Chara. Now, for those who think he should be traded and will be traded, I mean, look, could the Bruins get something for him? Yeah, absolutely, they could. I don't know that it would be, I don't think it would be worth it, though. If Chara at this stage of his career is worth probably more to the Bruins than he is to someone else, and we'll have to see what happens. I think the only way he moves, given his the various clauses in his contract that are protecting him from just being traded outright, would be if he were to exercise what Ray Bourque did in 2000 by going to management and asking to be traded because he wants to play for a contender. I think at this stage of his career, I don't know that he would do that. He's happy in Boston. He's got young kids. I don't know that You know, it's a totally different situation in terms of Ray Bourque, whose kids were about grown or, you know, were older and could weather that transition better. And you know, he did ultimately end up in Colorado and he did win his Stanley Cup. Char has won a Stanley Cup, so it's not like he's never, you know, tasted champagne, you know, from the silver chalice. So I think it's just, it might be a bridge too far for fans who are just convinced that the right answer is to trade Chara. It could happen, but I wouldn't bank on it. I think the person that holds the keys to that happening is him, and I don't know that the Bruins would get really commensurate value. They're certainly not going to get, you know, a top defensive player in return. That kind of defeats the purpose. If you're trading for Char, it's because you've got a good defense already and he's going to put you over the top. And you can play him in a lower role, not like in Boston where he's on your top pairing. You know, he's your top two defenseman. Look, he's still a heck of a player. I'm not trying to denigrate and diminish Big Z. I mean, he's a future Hall of Famer. He will go in the Hall of Fame. He's been a staple player for years in the National Hockey League. But realistically, he's just not what he used to be. And well, the Bruins can't just depend. We've seen the last 2 years. He alone is not anywhere near enough to get this defense where it needs to be, and that is getting them into contention for the Stanley Cup and into the playoffs at the very least. Kevin Miller earlier, a good guy, signed to a 4-year extension, $2.5 million a year, and it becomes one of those, okay, you know, not a popular move. You know, sometimes he tends to be a whipping boy, scapegoat for fans that just, you know, see that he doesn't have the high end skill level, yet he's playing a bigger role for this team. And I think one of the contributing factors also was that there was this love affair in certain circles with Colin Miller, and fans wanted to see Colin Miller more because he's got a better skill level and a higher ceiling, and there's no denying that. But Colin Miller, his defensive play and his defensive zone awareness wasn't where it needed to be, and so the coaches, you know, often went with Kevin Miller. And you know, the thing with the former University of Vermont captain is that, you know, he's like McQuaid, he plays such a physical style that he ends up getting hurt a lot. And so he's had trouble making it through entire seasons. You know, there's a lot to be said for his courage and his physical play, but, you know, he is, again, he's another limited bottom four guy who's going to, you know, be asked to play a top four role on this team. And you know, you just have to go back and question the wisdom of that. You know, he's a willing guy. He'll do whatever the team asks him to, but is he capable? Now the advanced statistics, some of the advanced in the analytics, you know, the puck possession stats and the various things that point to a player's effectiveness indicate that Miller is better than he gets credit for. But oftentimes he fails the eye test simply because he plays so many minutes, so many more minutes than he probably should. And it's just like anything else. The more you play, the more you get exposed, the more mistakes you'll make, or the more goals will be allowed. And so if someone is already opposed to you to begin with, because they don't really think you bring value to the table, then their confirmation bias will play out if you're skating a lot, because you know, it doesn't matter how good a defenseman you are, you know, goals are going to be scored under your watch. There's no defenseman that goes an entire season without goals being scored against them. The key is, you know, those players that can skate a lot of minutes and handle it and end up making more positive plays than negative plays. And so when you on the balance and on the whole, they end up being, you know, star players and key contributors and performers. And, you know, unfortunately for Kevin Miller, more is expected of him than he can reasonably deliver, but it's a new season. We'll see what he's able to provide. Colin Miller's a little more complicated just because, you know, he is a player who has a higher skill level and abilities than Kevin Miller does. He was, another player in the Milan Lucic trade that the Bees got from the Kings. And on paper, he can do it all. I mean, he can skate, he can shoot, he can pass. He is the prototypical modern NHL defenseman. He may not have ideal size. That is working a little against him. He's around 6'1". So he's not a big, you know, he's not a big guy, but he's not a smaller, you know, undersized defenseman either. But where the questions come in with Colin Miller or Chiller is that, you know, the head, you know, how capably and effectively can he process the game? Read, react, defensive awareness, all of those things that, you know, are not things that you can quantitatively measure. And certainly, you know, you can understand people who are watching him and they're saying, well, look at this guy, you know, he can really move the puck up the ice and he's got a good shot. And at one point he was scoring at a half a point per game clip. Why is he being scratched? Why is he being, you know, why are his limits being, or minutes being limited? And, you know, the answer is because he's making mistakes. He's not doing, he's not in position and he's not doing what the coaches need him to. And, you're not going to get a lot of minutes. You're not going to get a prime time role if they don't trust you. And I know fans can debate the wisdom of that. And they can question the coaches, and that's their right as fans. But it's not so simple as saying, you know, hey, put Colin Miller into the lineup because he's more skilled. I've found the put a player in because he's more skilled to be one of the lazier arguments I see, you know, on the internet and Twitter. But you see it repeatedly, and that just, again, it illustrates a fundamental lack of understanding of how the world works. Talent, of course, is key. It's important, but it's not the only factor. And so when it comes to earning coaches' trust and earning more ice time, hockey sense and the ability to read, react, and process is becoming more and more important, more critical than ever. And simply pointing to a player's skill level or pointing to the AHL All-Star Game skills competition numbers and saying, well, this guy now, you know, you need to have him in the lineup because he, you know, won the fastest skater competition or had the hardest shot. It's just, you know, it's a non-starter as an argument in itself. I mean, can you make that case, you know, as factors to why someone like Colin Miller should have an expanded role with this team? Absolutely. But is that justification in of itself? No, it's not. When you break down the film and you look at Miller, there are just times when he's out of position, not reacting quickly enough. And at the NHL level, you know that the game moves so fast and split second decisions can have a significant consequence in terms of a goal allowed or not. And if you're slow to react or you make the wrong move or you move the puck to the wrong spot on the ice, it can have a catastrophic, you know, consequence for you in a game situation. And I think, you know, the flip side of the argument is, well, you know, Kevin Miller does it too. Yeah, you know, a lot of the mistakes Miller makes probably has more to do with the, you know, limited ability than him not knowing what to do. And I think, you know, coaches will trust that and live with that more than they will the player who just doesn't seem to get it. And that's where Joe Morrow comes in. He's kind of in a similar situation where very toolsy, you know, he and Colin Miller are two very toolsy players. One's a left shot guy in Morrow's case and a former first round pick. And in Miller's case, he's a right shot D. Both have the NHL talent to be something and to contribute significantly at this level. But we don't know about the head. We don't know about the vision, the instincts, and that's up to the Bruins coaches to decide what they're going to do with them. So this is a key year for both players. The Bruins recently re-signed Miller to a two-year contract at a very reasonable rate, hoping that Colin Miller can be the player that his talent seems to indicate he can be. And, you know, I like him. I think, you know, give him an expanded role and give him an opportunity. But he's got to, you know, improve the decision making. He's got to be able to be a little more decisive, you know, with the puck in his own end and make better reads and just play the position better. It's not about, you know, not purely about, you know, how he can boost the transition game and aid the Bruins in the offensive side of things. So bottom line, Morrow, Miller, Bruins really could use prime time performances from both players, one or the other. But there's just not much other help on the roster to go. You've got John Michael Lyles, veteran, came in at the trade deadline, played well, undersized veteran with real good feet, puck moving ability, but not a stalwart defensive presence. The hope here is that given a full training camp to acclimate himself as opposed to having to come in and figure it out on the fly as he did late last February, he'll perform better, but he represents a marginal upgrade to what the Bruins already had, and he was on that defense, so he's not what you would call a new ad. He's a he's a new old face, and again, talented guy, brings a lot of experience. You have to give Lyles credit. Like Torrey Krug, he's a Michigan State product and has been in the league a long time. Has performed well. Was a late round pick. Not much was expected of him. Came out of Colorado and established himself as one of the better offensive defensemen in his youth. Now he's on the back end of a solid but unspectacular career. And so that leads us to the future. Who's next? The hope that surrounds quite a few faces that are in the system, either getting ready to play for Providence this year or still in junior and in some cases in college. One player who has gained a lot of notoriety since being a second-round pick in 2015 is Brandon Carlo. 6'5", shutdown D, just really really accomplished defensive defenseman who can really skate, native of Colorado, played his major junior hockey with the Tri-City Americans of the Western Hockey League, 37th overall pick. He was taken with the first of two second-rounders acquired from the New York Islanders for Johnny Boychuk, and by all accounts looks pretty good, got more accolades in Buffalo for the Prospects Challenge, played very well for the Bruins. Again, it's his mobility, it's his reach, it's his poise defensively. He's very tough to beat one-on-one. And the real concern that I've had all along with Carlo is just the hype. It seems like, you know, sometimes fans want to get really excited about values and steals and, you know, who's on what underrated list and who's, you know, and again, you understand it. It's part of the analysis. It's part of the, you know, it's a fact of life when you analyze sports. But I think at some point, sometimes the hype can be counterproductive. And all along, it seems like there's been this groundswell movement to get Brandon Carlo in there. And that, you know, some people just think that, you know, he's, because he's 6'5 and he's mobile, that translates to, you know, being a legitimate two-way threat offensively. I don't know that he has the vision and the pure offensive hockey sense and creativity to be that two-way threat. And, you know, if he's ready to skate for the NHL club, so be it. Put him in there, see what he does. But I think he could also gain a lot of benefit by going down to Providence. We'll see where the Bruins are. If you look at the veteran lineup I just mentioned, I mean, you've got a pretty clear defined, unless a trade or something, you know, injuries happen, you've got a pretty clearly defined top six. And so you'd have to bring Carlo in maybe as an extra. What's working in his favor is a right shot D. So you could slot him in there somewhere on the right side. And again, he brings certainly potential to contribute right away, but I don't know that people should be counting on him to bring the offense. Another player that I think probably doesn't get enough mention, but is in a similar situation in that he's more than likely going to be in Providence this year, but could see some Boston time, is Rob O'Gara. Last pick of the fifth round in 2011, the year the Bruins won the Stanley Cup, spent another year at Milton Academy, was the captain, and then went on to 4 years at Yale, won a national championship. He's won championships at the prep and the NCAA level, so O'Gara is a proven winner from Long Island. Grew up an Islanders fan, great family. He's just always been a very impressive prospect, even though he was raw coming out of prep. Always had really good skating ability for his size. He was about 6'3", 6'4", when the Bruins drafted him. Very skinny, only about 100, 175 pounds. He's up to about 215, hovering around 220 now, so he's put on some good weight. Fluid footwork all along, good reach, another defensive defenseman. Probably a little better with the puck, I think, than Brandon Carlo is. I think O'Gara is underrated in that regard. People don't give him enough credit for being able to make that first pass. And he's not going to be a real big point getter, and he doesn't have a fearsome shot. you know, he's not going to be this classic two-way threat kind of guy, whereas you could make the argument that maybe we haven't seen that yet from Carlo. I think O'Gara is pretty well established what he's probably going to be, and that's a solid 4-5 shutdown D who can log some good minutes for you. And you know, he's not as dominant defensively maybe as Carlo is at this stage of his development, but pretty good. I think sometimes O'Gara can get to trying to do too much and running around. I think if he simplifies it and you know, keeps the puck in front of him and doesn't try to do too much, he's fine. And beyond that, we'll get into some of the high picks that they've had. Bruins have spent their first choices of the last 2 years on defensemen with skill. In 2015, 13th overall was Jakub Zboril. You know, reviews on him at this, you know, this prospects challenge and the rookie camp have been mixed. He had a very good development camp in July. This is after kind of falling off last season after being drafted with Boston's first of three first-rounders, kind of had a tougher season, was asked to play more of a defensive role. The numbers fell off. And Zboril on talent alone is easily a top two, top three NHL-caliber defenseman. Good skater, big, heavy shot, can move the puck well. I mean, he sees the ice and can pass it and work the point on the power play. I mean, he's got a pretty significant shot, gets it off quickly. It's hard, it's heavy. I mean, you know, he's got the things you look for. He's also got some nasty. He plays a pretty capable and effective defensive game when he wants to. The challenge with Zboril is attitude, and sometimes he's just passive and disengaged and doesn't seem to be trying all that hard, kind of coasting around. And some analysts, and they have a good point, is, you know, some of these players just look effortless in the way they go about doing their job. They're not necessarily not trying as much as they just, it looks so easy and they're able to kind of slow the game and control the tempo. I don't know that Zboril is there. I do know that when I've seen him on, you know, mostly, you know, breaking down film, it just looks like there are times when he's not fully engaged and involved in the game. He'll go long stretches where, you know, where he's not really standing out or doing a whole lot because he just kind of doesn't seem to be applying the full array of his skills. We'll have to see. Some people are concerned about this. Others are not. Bruins say he's on track. He is signed, but he has to make the team. Because he was born in 1997, so he has to make the Boston roster or go back to junior. And let's be honest, I mean, we've talked about the veterans that are in the pecking order. You've got guys in the AHL that are vying for spots and can be sent up and down. It would be hard to imagine the Bruins keeping Zboril, although with a strong training camp, it wouldn't be outside the realm of possibility to see the Bruins keep him with the team for that 10-game practice stint where he gets an opportunity to be around the team, maybe gets in a game here and there, and then is sent to junior. But once Zboril goes back to junior, he's not eligible to be brought back up in any capacity until the St. John Sea Dogs season is over. The other big prospect on defense, and the one who's probably at the top of the Boston Bruins organizational pecking order, along with Zach Senishin, is 2016 first-rounder Charlie McAvoy, going to BU for his sophomore season, had a great freshman year. It looked like it was going to be down to McAvoy or Dante Fabro, who's joining McAvoy at BU under Coach David Quinn and Albie O'Connell and the Terrier staff there. McAvoy had a great offseason, looked really good at the Bruins development camp, and then stepped it up at the USA National Evaluation Camp. He's a lock to be on the USA World Junior team, as he was on the team a year ago as a freshman at BU. He didn't put up any points, but he looked good in the action. I mean, you can see his skating ability and the way he pushes the pace and his offensive skills. His defensive game is still a work in progress, but he's got a real physical dimension to him. He's not overly tall. He's only about 6 foot tall, but he's extremely thick and strong already. I would not be surprised to see McAvoy turn pro at the end of the season at BU. See the Bruins sign him. He could potentially be on the NHL roster by April sometime, depending on how far BU goes, and they are expected to go pretty deep and potentially even contend and be in the Frozen Four in 2017. But regardless, he'll do one more year of one more season of school at least, and I suspect he'll take that next step, and the Bruins will want to get him into the system right away and start to benefit from his ability, because the thing you hear about over and over again with McAvoy is his maturity. He's just a very mature, capable player, and he is your projected two-way threat who can really defend and score and do a variety of things for you. Another player on defense that has intrigued and certainly did his part at the Prospects Challenge and looked good was Jeremy Lauzon. He was drafted in the second round. He was one of the Calgary picks. The Bruins got three picks for Dougie Hamilton, a first and 2 seconds. He was the second of the two second-rounders in 2015 out of Rouyn-Noranda of the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. Went to the Memorial Cup, lost in the championship game to the London Knights, so just came very close to winning a Memorial Cup championship. Suffered a scary neck laceration to a skate during the Quebec League playoffs. And you have to admire Lauzon for coming back. He was lucky, nearly suffered some nerve damage that could have ended his career. He's just a strong two-way defenseman. You know, I've talked about this multiple times on podcasts and on the blog, but, you know, he's not as defensively sound as Brandon Carlo, nor is he as big, and he's not as skilled as a Zboril or Charlie McAvoy is offensively, but he's got elements of the offense and the defense that make him a more well-rounded player and more of a good NHL prospect in terms of a defenseman that can do, you know, a little bit of everything for you. And that's so important. Another player that's in the mix is Matt Grzelcyk. Just finished at BU, was a two-year captain there, was a third-rounder in 2012. He's from Charlestown. His dad, John's on the Boston TD Garden Bowl Gang. So Matty grew up around the Bruins, was a standout player at Belmont Hill Academy as a prep player, and then went out to the national team. He is small. I mean, he's like a, you know, Torrey Krug in terms of he's got the height and the size disadvantage, but as a tremendous skater, can really move the puck, has improved his shot. He's more of an offensively inclined defenseman. He's got to improve his defensive play. He's like Krug. He's going to have trouble physically matching up against the bigger, stronger forwards, so he's going to have to outsmart and outwit them. But I think he's probably ticketed for Providence. He's going to try to win a job out of camp, but it's just so hard with that pecking order being what it is. But I wouldn't count against him. I mean, he's a character guy and a leader, and I think he will probably benefit the most, though, from playing in Providence. Alex Grant was the only outside addition that the Bruins made in the offseason to bring in a defenseman. This is a former first overall pick in the Quebec Major Junior Bantam Draft. Was
originally thought to have pretty high-end NHL upside, never really developed, although interestingly enough, he's played some NHL games and scored a couple goals, and so he does have pretty good numbers for given his very small sample size. He's a big guy, about 6'4". He's a right-hand shot defenseman. He's he's 27 years old, and he's really minor league guy. Like he's the guy I think that the Bruins brought in hopes that maybe he does well enough to earn a job and you can bring him up in a pinch, but he's really your minor league anchor that you put in the Providence defense along with Tommy Cross, who is a Boston second round pick in 2007. The infamous 2007 draft that did not net much of anything. Cross is the only guy, and Cross and Hamill are the only players from that draft to even play, and they've been very limited impact players. Cross is a great guy, another leader, was captain of Boston College, has suffered several significant knee injuries that have hampered his progress, but you know, kind of is what he is. You can at least give him credit for getting some games in last year at the NHL level, but more of a minor league depth journeyman guy who's, you know, going to give you every ounce of what he has, but just doesn't have enough ability to be anything more than a bottom pairing, type of player at best. And, you know, the problem with the Boston Bruins defense is not their bottom four. It's their top two. And so they have no shortage of capable players that could come in and slot in on the bottom rotation, be 5, 6, 7 guys. But that's not really what they need. They need a legitimate bell cow defenseman that could kind of maybe take some of the pressure off of Torrey Krug and Zdeno Chara. And so that's kind of where we are. So no disrespect intended to Tommy Cross. I mean, I've always had a lot of time for him as a player and a person. I believe he'll be a leader in life. You know, he'll probably work in some kind of leadership role. If he gets into hockey, he'll, you know, likely be a coach or a general manager or something, because he has that intelligence and that personal discipline. And it says a lot that the Bruins have continued to sign and keep him around. He's kind of like Tyler Randall, where he's just continued to have a job here, even though his performance, you would have figured they probably could have cut him loose several years ago. But yeah, you know, it's pretty good. Pretty good guy for Providence. But if the Bruins are rolling Tommy Cross out into the roster next year, then so some significant things have happened, because I don't think the light or the switch will be flipped and he'll suddenly become a top performing NHL defenseman like the Bruins had hoped he would be when they moved up in the second round to take him 9 years ago. There are a few more defensemen in the system. Obviously, we're talking about guys they took this last draft. Ryan Lindgren, freshman at the University of Minnesota, he's going to be very good. He was with the second of the two picks that the Bruins got for Johnny Boychuk, and can't say enough about him and his long-term potential. Just a really good, another two-way defenseman, but plays bigger than his 6 foot height. You know, good skater, can really move the puck and plays with jam and grit. Somewhat limited by his lack of ideal size, but again, he hits harder and plays the game cleanly. And then Cam Clark, who was drafted in the fifth round, I thought really nice value pick. Saw him quite a bit with the Lone Star Brahmas of the North American League last year. He's off to Ferris State, and he's a long-term project kind of guy, but late bloomer. But you have to like, you know, good blend of size and hockey sense and patience and just a, you know, a refined game, because he's a little older, 20-year-old prospect. And Linus Arneson, unfortunately, he got injured at the practice at the Prospects Challenge, so he didn't get a chance to play. He's kind of a curious player. He has the ability to potentially work in and see some NHL time this year, but he's kind of on the outside looking in, because he doesn't bring you much offensive ceiling, potential, upside, whatever you want to call it. Just a solid defensive guy, so probably ticketed for Providence again. Chris Casto, another one who, you know, is going to bring you experience and bring you some jam, but doesn't really have high-end offensive ceiling. I would think that if injuries start to take their toll, you know, guys like Casto will be, you know, on the short list for call-ups. But it's going to be an interesting time. Like I said, You know, the Bruins' problem, they're not in the bottom four, where they have no shortage of capable players that could come in and be those, you know, that, you know, 4-5-6, 3-4-5-6 defensemen for them. They've got to have the one and the two, and even the top three that can, you know, earn the bulk of the minutes, play in all situations, shut down opposing team scoring efforts, and then also bring some offense. And that's really where the Bruins are going to be challenged. So I'm afraid, I know Don Sweeney is trying to find another, you know, find more talent and upgrade the defense. But, you know, he said that the market is hard to do, and I don't disagree with that. But, you know, if you're going to make a trade, you have to give to get, and it takes two to tango. And it's easy to say, hey, they need to do this. I don't think it's been for a lack of trying, but this is a results-oriented business. And the fact of the matter is, it just hasn't happened. And they went and they signed David Backes, which, you know, was somewhat controversial because of the age and the amount of money and the potential for diminishing returns. And yet the most glaring need, positional need for the Bruins is still a glaring need. And it's hard to fathom that the Bruins are going to have a significant uptick in performance and improvement this year with the defense looking like it is. They're hoping that guys like Colin Miller and Joe Morrow will play, you know, have more impactful seasons at both ends of the ice. They're hoping that Krug will, with a healed shoulder, will be more of a two-way, you know, point producer, score more goals for them. You know, he did put up a career year in points. He had a lot of assists, but hoping he'll find the back of the net more. Maybe Chara will be a little healthier, even though he's a year older, and he'll improve. But hope is, as the former Army Chief of Staff Gordon R. Sullivan once said, hope is not a method. I mean, you can look at it and you can say, well, you know, we're putting faith in these players. You know, like Kevin Miller will have a better year, and you know, after signing him to an extension, maybe Adam McQuaid will be, you know, more healthy and be able to make it through a full season without missing a big chunk of games, which, you know, not likely given his career trends. He just tends to get injured because of the physicality and the way he plays the game. All of this hope stuff isn't going to really translate into results when you get down to it, because we have not seen the Bruins appreciably upgrade their talent level. So fans are right to be cautious, skeptical, cynical, whatever you want to say. Like, you can't disagree with any of that. Defense was the number one need going into the offseason. We're getting ready to begin camp, and Alex Grant is the only outside player brought in. They did re-sign John Michael Lyles, which is good, but ultimately it's going to be another challenging year if something isn't done. So we'll have to see. I don't think that Don Sweeney has given up the ghost on trying to acquire some outside help, but, you know, and who would that be? Jacob Trouba, who knows? Chris Russell's rumored to be, you know, being linked with a Western Conference team. He still hasn't signed. Jason Demers would have been a good player to bring in, but he apparently was not really, keen on what Boston had to offer and went with Florida. So, you know, the Bruins are kind of in this situation where they have some nice talent coming up through the system, but they're not really going to be ready to help this year unless they get lucky and someone comes in and just really plays well and helps to stabilize this team. But you can't count on that, so all we have to go on is what we see on paper, and right now you can't expect a major improvement. So Bruins will be a bubble team once again. Will they make the playoffs? They came awfully close the last 2 years. They could, with better goaltending and some scoring, get in, or they could find themselves taking a step backwards. We'll have to see what happens, but ultimately, if you are the pessimistic Bruins sports fan coming into the season, you know, Don Sweeney and company haven't really given you a reason to trust that this plan is going to work. So I don't have any good news for you. I try to be fair and even-handed, but ultimately myself, I am a little skeptical in terms of what this defense is going to do. So I wish them the best. I know they will work hard. They're a good group of guys, but being a good group of guys is great for gatherings and community relations events, but ultimately when you're trying to win hockey games, if the other team out there is better than you are, right off the bat at the very first puck drop, if they're more talented and better, then you have to work that much harder to find ways to win and make a difference. And that's just a tall order over an 82 game season. So every other team is trying to get better and improve, and I don't know that the Bruins did enough improving in the offseason to achieve their basic goal of making the playoffs. But we will see. I have to believe there's another move afoot, to get a defenseman, bring a defenseman from the outside. But who that would be, I don't know. If I had my druthers, I would be moving heaven and earth to try to work a three-way deal with Winnipeg to try to get Jacob Trouba. I think he's worth it, but that's just me. It is risky, and it is not going to come cheap. So that's up to Don Sweeney to figure out. But for now, we're going to let this podcast go. Thank you for supporting the blog. I appreciate all the comments and the feedback, and I look forward to bringing you more updates as the season goes on. New hockey season around the corner, guys. Enjoy. For the Scouting Post, this is Kirk Ludeke. Thank you, and have a great week. The time has come.